that introduction, and it's
my privilege to welcome you all to the formal part of our conference. It's helpful to have an introduction, actually, and give my name, because I was asked to say a few words at our plant show the other day, or closing words, and I just launched into that without introducing myself, and I think there were a lot of strange looks at me. So who the hell is this guy? Why is he talking to us, and what's he doing here? But anyway, thank you for naming me and my title. There is some dispute as to whether it was Mark Twain or Benjamin Franklin who coined the famous quote, "There are only two things certain in life, death and taxes." The issue really is with that word certain, because you don't really hear that word today unless it's got the un prefix in front of it. In 2018, I attended an investment trust conference where we were introduced to the concept of a VUCA world. I'm going to have to do my coordination bit here, aren't I? A VUCA world that has now become a familiar acronym that stands for volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity. It described a situation at the time of constant unpredictable change, and the cliche kind of corporate examples were Uber's impact on travel and the taxi industry, Airbnb's impact or disruptive influence on the lettings marketplace. And at the time, it felt like a kind of useful way of thinking. But clearly, no one predicted the world would get even crazier. Brexit, worldwide pandemic, a war in Europe, and all of those supply chain issues that have so dramatically impacted the cost of doing business. And that's made this concept perhaps even more relevant. Now, I've talked about a tipping point in the pace of change before, really driven by the whole climate change agenda combined with the digital revolution. Facts like half the jobs our children will end up with don't exist now. The amount of data generated, consumed, and stored in the next 2 years will be more than the total that has ever been produced. And then we've got things like 3D printers producing beef burgers. So these are now wholly believable facts. So we're now in a VUCA world that's on steroids. And I happen to believe we are at one of those moments in history where we witness an actual acceleration in the pace of change, a fourth industrial revolution, and none more so than in the whole agri-horti sector. And I believe that we'll be facing into something that's perhaps bigger than the agricultural revolution, bigger than the green revolution of the 1970s. There are common examples of all of this, vertical farming, plant-based proteins, reforestation programs, the government's recent announcement that's going to reform gene editing. But the two key drivers, as I said earlier, are really the climate change one and the technology one. So we've got big things happening with artificial intelligence, the Internet of Things, both of those things right now capable of impacting on how we do business. And the sustainability piece, a major part of our agenda going forward. And all of that twisted and accelerated by the pandemic, Brexit, and what's going on in Ukraine. And we've got all of that environmental legislation and regulation that supports this that's coming down the road at us and at a huge cost. ESG, EPR, EPC, ELMS, SFDR, TCFD. If you're into acronyms, there's no better place to be than in environmental regulation. And if we're going to succeed in this VUCA world, then those traits that we all put into motion during the pandemic around agility and resilience come into play. And I firmly believe that the HTA will have an even bigger role to play in supporting and protecting the industry. We certainly need to be championing the today agenda around the cost of doing business and energy in particular. We do need to be the voice of the industry. But importantly, in my view, there are some tools we can employ to help cope with this. And I was just going to share some of those with you now. You might question the relevance of this. Right now, we're facing into some of the biggest, most existential challenges in our lifetime. And people are understandably focused on the now, survival even. But I know that if we can steel ourselves to look ahead, look beyond the now, it will be invaluable in terms of how we cope with present conditions and how we exploit the future. Core purpose, vital for guiding our direction of travel. Why do we do what we do? Now, I'm not going to talk to all of these things in detail, just a few snippets. And there was one thing I experienced some 10 or 15 years ago now, so it's a little bit dated, when looking at this whole question of core purpose. And that was a video which I think I've shared with the HTA team by Simon Sinek. But it's still that video, if you can look it up, still does it for me. It's still as relevant now as it was 10, 15 years ago. Taking a long-term view, this is a quote by Warren Buffett, still the CEO of Berkshire Hathaway at 93. Now, a lot of us in this room will have long-established family businesses, and stewardship is a key. And connecting that past, present with the future, all essential. So this is really about being able to balance the long-term and the short-term. Making decisions just for the short-term gain without an eye on the longer-term ambition won't get you there. If you look after the short-term, the long-term will look after itself. If you only dream of the long-term, you'll never get there. These are dilemmas that kind of face us every day. But what does that mean in the VUCA world? It means, notwithstanding the issues of the now, we have to scan further ahead. In fact, it's imperative we do that, which really comes back to the key theme of this conference. What does our world look like in 2030? What things do we need to start to think about now that keeps us relevant then? And that accelerated change piece means that horizon becomes our foreground pretty quickly. So horizon planning, horizon scanning is something that we need to be engaged in. It needs to be a core part of thinking, whether that be around the technology that I've already mentioned, the metaverse, augmented reality, that drives or may drive very different consumer behaviours, be that about carbon footprinting, driving more locally sourced plants or having a serious impact on global supply chains, biosecurity issues, similar concerns, or be that the whole regulatory environmental environment, be that green spaces being the primary driver behind the growth of our towns and cities. So there'll be many more of these things, which I think or hope you'll hear about today. It doesn't mean we have to believe in every one of these things, but we should be able to have some great conversations, and it should stimulate a healthy debate that influences our strategy. Having a good radar, having the ability to sense change, will allow us to seek out opportunities. And these issues we might be facing into right now might be big, but the opportunities might be even greater. So how does all of this come together? This is something that's, I guess, driven my corporate life, and this is a quote, funnily enough, from Pablo Picasso. Not necessarily known for business insight, but I can tell you, if you take the time to look up his top 10 quotes, they are, in a corporate sense, certainly for me, totally compelling and very, very true. So a clear vision backed by a definitive plan gives you a tremendous feeling of confidence. Being able to visualize those building blocks that take you along the way is where, in my view, great conversations happen. And if we innovate and if we plan for growth, we do engineer ourselves away from volatility. Again, it may be that we're hunkering down right now, but growth allows you to do so many things. Feel more confident. It allows you to be in control. It creates opportunities that we didn't, just looking at that plan, can create opportunities that we didn't necessarily know existed. And it allows us to reinvest. Now, these aren't my words, but I understand them. We counter volatility with vision. We meet uncertainty with understanding. We react to complexity with simplicity. and we fight ambiguity with agility. I can leave you with one thought. What's important is never urgent. So that's the generic bit of my chat. Perhaps a little bit dry. Trust me, it probably gets a bit drier in a minute. So the second part of this introduction was really to see what drivers of change actually impact our industry specifically. And I put a lot of yellow ink on this and tried to cut it back a bit. But I believe there will be a shift in how the industry is perceived by government, our academic institutions, and by the public at large. And I think this pandemic that we've been through has already demonstrated the power that gardening and open green spaces have on our well-being. But if you combine that with the realisation of the importance of plants, trees and soil have with regard to all of those ambitions we have around climate change, then you have got something very powerful. And something that we, and I say we because I know there are others in this audience who've joined in on this, have been campaigning for a long time, is the change of designation for our sector from ornamental to environmental. And I happen to believe that over time this would have a fundamental effect on how we're perceived by all stakeholders, by government and particularly by academia. If we're going to attract young, talented people to our industry, then that direct association with environmental sciences must have a wider appeal. An understanding within government that climate change policy in the UK cannot take place without a strong domestic horticultural industry, again, fundamental. And it's not just about semantics. You just need to look at the definitions of these words. Ornamental, decorative, fancy, cosmetic, beautiful rather than useful. Environmental horticulture is a term that's been around for a long time. And if you look that up, it's the science and art of improving the environment around us with the use of plants. Garden retail, fundamental disruptors, I don't necessarily see them. And in recent years, where I think we should congratulate ourselves is that we have actually consolidated that position as retail destination, retail leisure destination centres. And we have, in fact, there taken over from the high street department stores in the range of products and services they provide. And I can only see that success continuing, underwritten by location, by ambiance, by accessibility, and the very nature of the products that we sell through centres, garden centres. Clearly there will be change, and I've got two observations there. And again, this may be a statement of the obvious, but I think it will become more significant, and that's about our brand and our brandings and how we're perceived. And I think our brands will need to appeal to customers' higher order values in life. And that connection with nature, the natural world and the environment will be an ever increasing driver of choice. Secondly, I think businesses will need to be omnichannel. Online success in horticulture has been difficult to achieve. Return on capital historically not pretty. I've had first-hand experience of that back in the late 90s, early 2000s, trying to set up an internet business. I don't know people's experience here, but not an easy thing to do. But I do believe that we need to look at the whole digital transformation piece through a different lens, not just as a pure play, but integrated into everything we do. I believe that the latest revolution, if you call it a revolution in digital technology, will open up opportunities to online retail that perhaps didn't exist before. And I'd be very wary of ignoring the potential here. And again, I come back to metaverse, artificial intelligence, augmented reality, the Internet of Things, and how all of these things, or some of these things, attaches to mobile devices, and the ability to connect direct with your customer at just the right moment, and how technology can be used to actually reinforce personalization rather than the opposite, I believe will be critical. So I think weaving together our physical spaces and people's experiences virtually is where success will lie. And again, I hope that the HTA can over time help us understand what good looks like, what choices and options we might have. Landscape sector, well, the wind has to be set pretty fair. The full impact of climate change policy will be felt here. That whole realisation that plants and trees have a significant impact on carbon absorption, temperature control, flood prevention, the whole importance around greening our cities, parks and things, alongside all of those things that we know about domestic gardens and the health and well-being benefits of such. So two political observations here. And I noted what Steve McCurdy was saying the other day, but I do feel that the industry will begin to win that discussion that allows a continuance of a healthy choice of plants and trees that characterise our countryside, assist biodiversity and protect against climate change, rather than a restricted indigenous range that may be promulgated by some NGOs and, dare I say, our own plant health departments at DEFRA. I anticipate a change in the demands of clients and of that whole project management industry, project management practices that places, or is historically placed, landscaping at the back of the queue when it comes to cost. Whereas I think in the future, those things will be at the forefront of objectives rather than that part of the bill of quantities that can be sliced off. Our grower sector, two key drivers for the nursery sector, demand and technology. Demand simply driven from what's been discussed above. And I think new technologies to keep costs down. So I would anticipate significant opportunity and significant growth for this sector. Government will have a role here in terms of boosting confidence. And I think there's lots of little things government can do to help that, whether it's easier planning permission, whether it's influencing the relationship we have with utilities, or how the whole public procurement system works. And again, the HTA will have a role here in terms of leading on this and allowing government to understand how our industry can make a difference. So I think we will be confident to invest in new space, new glass, new technologies that go along with this, and that will enable a more competitive domestic industry. And the HTA are alive to all of that potential. Our green growth agenda, produced last September, is as valid today as it was then, and we'll continue to push on this on your behalf. So in conclusion, trust me, I fully understand the headwinds of today, but I firmly believe that the winds are set very fair just over the horizon. And we should all try and take time to peer over the parapet. And if we do, I can't help feel only optimism for our longer term future. Thank you for listening.